Welcome to the next in our series of New Horizons events, which we're doing in association with our podcast, Without Borders. I'm the founder and managing director of Taito PR. And, you know, the idea behind this series of events is, as we're all in lockdown, giving us an opportunity to sort of share ideas, share knowledge, share experiences as we look to kind of manage the situation in the present, as well as kind of plan for the future. And I'm joined by my colleague, Flick Hazelhurst, who's going to join us with our chat today with Morten.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to everybody that's joining live today. Thanks for taking the time. Just so you're aware, all of these events are released as part of our Without Borders podcast series. So if you want to recommend this one to any of your colleagues or friends, it will be live on our website next week. And last week's event, which was on the topic of the end of money as we know it with financial expert Andy Bryant, is already live on our website at taitopr.com if you want to take a look at that.
Brilliant. And so today we're kind of turning our minds to the subject of like the future of work. And, you know, for a lot of people that would have been used to turning up to an office most days of the week, you know, the way that we work, our workplace has kind of changed unrecognizably in the wake of COVID-19. But as we've been going through that and as we've been experiencing that, sort of we're probably, a lot of us are kind of starting to turn our minds to sort of questioning how much of this sort of remote working that we've been getting used to and actually kind of adopted to pretty seamlessly will remain as we, you know, hopefully kind of exit from these lockdown period. And so in order to kind of explore this topic, I'm delighted to have Morten Brogger, who is the CEO of Wire, with us. Wire is the most secure collaboration platform. And prior to being the CEO of Wire, Morten has done a lot of work within the collaboration space in other areas of technology. So he's like, probably if we're going to have this conversation with anyone, you know, he's the man to have this conversation with. And, you know, it's kind of really interesting, you know, opportunity to kind of get Morten's perspective on what he thinks, you know, in terms of the changes we're going through, which of these changes might then spill over into the future. So great to have you on the podcast, Morten.
Thank you so much, Brendan. I'm so pleased to be here.
Excellent. So we have got a bunch of questions for Morten, which we're going to be throwing at him over the next sort of 30 to 40 minutes. But for those of you who are joining us live, please do, you know, ask your own questions. We have, you know, there's a Q&A button at the bottom of your screen. So please, you know, throw questions down there and we'll endeavor to try and get through them as we go through the recording. So so kind of maybe just kicking off, Morten, how have you kind of like personally adapted to lockdown, both, I guess, personally and professionally?
Well, let's take the personal stuff first, right? pretty good, actually. But I'm also fairly lucky, right? Because I live on a 20-acre farm in Northern California, so I can go out. I can enjoy a little bit of fresh air. And to be honest, I can also see the mountains more clearly these days because there's less fog.
Yeah.
So it's actually not been that bad, I think. My wife and I just talked the other day. This is actually the first time in 6 years that we have been together for more than 3 weeks because we both travel a lot.
Yeah.
But it's actually working surprisingly well, I have to say. Yeah. So personally, fine. Professionally, well, let me start by kind of like describing at least the old me, right? Because I'm an old school guy. I actually like to be with people. I like to be in the office because I get a feel and a vibe of what is going on.
Yeah.
You know, you can just talk over the table. You can listen into conversation. You can add something, you know, without anything being structurally and formally set up. So I was skeptical on how I would adapt to that. And even though I've been working in collaboration for the last 6-7 years, it was a challenge for me, right? But I was concerned about my own productivity because I believed I need to be at work to be productive. But to be honest, it took days to get into this, and I have never been more efficient in my entire life.
Wow.
And, when I'm working, the whole company is working completely remote. I was also fairly skeptical. How is that going to work? How are we going to coordinate things? How are we going to keep up productivity? All that stuff and all these concerns you have. But
yeah,
I have to admit, I'm super proud of the entire Wire team. We've managed to do that. We figured out how to keep each other updated. We figured out how to work on projects. Even though that, you know, brainstorming sessions and developing new features and functionalities and all that stuff is always difficult, but we're figuring it out, and we've been blessed by being busy. And I think we learned a lot about this one. So, wow, was I wrong, right?
Yeah.
I save a few hours every day on commuting.
Yes.
They're spent equally private and for work. And you have a very tight schedule. There's a lot of calls, but you just get stuff done.
Yeah.
I think the efficiency in there, and you just feel good about what you're doing. So to me, I think some of the changes that I have experienced, I now believe is going to continue even after this one.
Yes.
And I believe the same thing will happen for the world, right?
So it's kind of like listening to you, it sounds like it's not just a case of, okay, we've been pretty good at adapting to the situation, but actually some of the things that we've kind of experienced are things that we'll want to hang on to, you know, and actually we're gonna, you know, you're seeing real positives in what you've experienced, not just kind of we're getting by.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'll work at home for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But there might be more days of doing that, and I might be more flexible in the people that I work with.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get back to Germany and visit our development center and the colleagues we have in Germany.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where we have the most colleagues.
Yes.
But it's working well, and there are absolutely good things to take away from this.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever get back to the old normal. This will be a new normal.
Interesting. And so I guess as a secure collaboration platform, in this kind of situation, you will have probably had a very, you know, interesting time in terms of what's going on in the world. How has it kind of affected your business?
Well, let's just be honest, right? It's affected our business in a very positive way. So we're one of those few but very lucky businesses which has benefited dramatically from this crisis. And we've been so busy talking to customers who fundamentally experienced a whole new set of needs in terms of security around the collaboration, about the security in the tools you use when you work from home. Because you know, most companies and government organizations just have projects who has a different secrecy level. And now they needed to deal with this, either accept a higher risk or provide the needed tools, right? And I think no one was really ready for this, to be honest.
No. And so have you seen a significant upturn in people wanting to, you know, access your services as a consequence of what's gone on?
Yes, very significant upturn.
Yeah.
You know, 10 times what we normally see.
Yeah.
Is setting up free trials and talking to us, and the last customers we have are very busy of accelerating their rollout plans. So we have a large European customer who wanted to roll out 10,000 users this quarter, but now we're talking about 100 to 150,000 users.
Yeah.
So a lot of acceleration has gone into this one. So yes, we absolutely see a completely different activity level.
Obviously, there's a big emphasis on what you're doing in terms of talking about the importance of security. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it kind of seems very like logical and common sense that large corporations who would normally kind of like be, you know, have a lot of their employees under the protection of their kind of office, their four walls, would be anxious about security and mindful about security. Do you think people are concerned enough about security given how many people are working remotely at the moment?
No. But it's also from where I come from, right?
Yeah.
And I personally believe that secure enough is not really a term in the future, right? But let me explain a little bit about how we do this, because it's fundamentally a new generation of security architecture that needs to be put in place, and that's the paradigm shift that we're looking into now. We call it like true end-to-end encryption, but let me try and explain
yeah,
how that works and why we're different than what I call the old school applications and security architectures, right? Let's explain about the old school of enterprise software. Mm. Users are connected through their devices over the internet to the cloud. In the cloud, you have all the logic, you have all the processing, you have all the storage, and you manage security. And if they do encryption, they normally manage, or 99.9% manage the encryption keys in the cloud. They encrypt during transit and sometimes at rest on the devices. Mm. The problem with this architecture is that technically, it allows the cloud provider to access the encryption keys. They have procedures in place, they have background checks in place, but technically they can access the keys, meaning that they can read all your collaborative content and they can listen into your conversations. This is what we call the man in the middle vulnerability. Mm. They can get subpoenaed, they have to get the keys, and if they get hacked and the hackers get access to the keys, same thing, man in the middle.
Mm.
This is why most large enterprises and government organizations have still preferred to have their confidential and high secret level collaboration behind their own firewall, because at least they're in control of it, and at least the man in the middle will be their own employees and they feel more in control of it, right?
Yeah.
Wire does it different. Yes, our users are connected through the devices to the servers. I use the word servers deliberately because you can deploy Wire either from our cloud as a SaaS solution, or you can deploy Wire on-premise behind your own firewalls if that is what you prefer. Mr. Customer, you decide.
Mm.
On the server, we have some of the logic, but actually the majority of the logic is in the application. So it's really a distributed cloud application, right? We have some of the processing, but actually the majority of the processing happens out here. We have some of the storage, mainly bigger documents, because big spreadsheets and PowerPoints will fill up mobile devices quickly. But when it comes to security, and the encryption keys, they only exist on the devices of our users. And by architecture, we cannot access them.
Mm.
And by the way, we are open source, so people can actually go on GitHub and analyze our software. You don't have to trust me, my website, my sales slides, or anything else. People can actually audit our software. It's part of the transparency of open source. So we cannot access the encryption key. So there's no man in the middle. I can get subpoenaed, but I have no keys to get. I can get hacked, but they cannot get your keys. So your communication and your content is safe.
Right.
Furthermore, Brandon, every time a user sends or receives a message in Wire, and a message needs to be understood in a very broad context. Text message, affirmable message, file share, phone call, video conference, screen share, whatever transaction you do in Wire, after each transaction, the encryption key gets updated.
Right.
So we're segmenting our customer's data into the smallest logic payloads, namely each message. And then we give it its own unique encryption key. Even to the extent that if you are sending me a message on Wire and I have five devices where I use Wire that synchronize in the back, you will use five encryption keys to send the same message. And if I should put that in layman terms, that's right. You have $1 million. You want to make sure no one steals your $1 million. So you go out in the market and you find the best safe available on the market. That's the encryption algorithm. And you buy that. And you put your $1 million in there. There will still be criminals who will make a business case. How much effort, how much risk is it to hack into that safe and run away with $1 million?
Yeah.
In Wire, your $1 million is in $1 notes. And you put one note in a million different safes, and there no longer is a business case.
Yeah.
So this is the new paradigm that goes there. And that is also why, you know, this is by architecture. It is privacy compliance, GDPR, CCPA, and it has the security element to secure the data, even if it is private and even if people have given their consent to share this.
In some ways, hearing you talk about that, it's interesting actually that particularly, you know, big global businesses are only actually thinking that they need something like this now, because even before coronavirus and before lockdown, these businesses were having people within them that were communicating across offices, across borders, every single day. So why do you think it's taken a pandemic to get businesses to realize that actually this is a really important issue?
Yeah, well, I think they were thinking about it before, right? And I think a lot of the technology and actually making it work in a compelling way is difficult. You know, it sounds easy, but technically it's not easy, right? How do you maintain the same and right level of usability? How do you provide that whole what we call the consumerization of enterprise collaboration look and feel? So it's always been a trade-off between security and usability, right? But now we've managed to get, you know, this kind of security architecture work in a highly usable function. So I think that's bringing it forward. So I think they've been thinking about it all the time. But, you know, the boundaries always get pushed, right? The bad guys get smarter and smarter. Their tools get smarter and smarter. Their computers are getting faster and faster. So the boundaries are getting pushed. And the world is just changing. Like, we needed collaboration to be more efficient, to work better together. Now there's just things in the collaboration that just requires a higher level of secrecy and thereby a different set of tools because the world has evolved.
Yeah,
that's how I see it. And clearly, to be honest, what we see as the first movers, what we call it the tip of the iceberg, is like the financial sector, the professional services, what we call critical energies, energy, telco, chemical, pharmaceutical, and central governments. You know, these are just like where you have a higher than normal secrecy requirements. And these are like the majority of the new customers we get. But we have customers everywhere. Right. Like during the crisis, we've had hundreds of new customers, small therapists, because people fundamentally still need to go and talk to the therapist, but they can't go physically. So this has to be handled remote. And how do you do this in a sufficiently secure way?
Yes.
So we've had hundreds of small therapists signing up for Wire in the last month and a half.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And I guess, you know, linking to what you were just saying around kind of security, I know one thing I've kind of seen you talk about in the media is around the fact that the world needs to tackle a $6 trillion cybersecurity problem. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's some research out there that, you know, the whole cybersecurity problem is costing the world that we live in around $6 trillion on an annual basis. You know, the cost to prevent it.
Yes.
The cost of the actual damages that you have there, the cost of the revenue and the business that gets lost during some of these attacks, and some of them are tremendous, but actually also the cost of cleaning it up after it happens, and even the cost of bankruptcies. Right, I read a research, for instance, like 76% of small and medium-sized companies in North America that get hit by ransomware are bankrupt within 12 months.
Wow. That's crazy.
So this is a massive problem out there, right? And we are spending a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
Just related to that, actually, just a question that's come in from somebody listening. Somebody's asked, do you think the EU will lower the strictness of GDPR to enable businesses to operate better from home? Do you think that might happen? And what do you think the implications of that would be from a security perspective?
I just cannot imagine that happening. It would be like taking a big step backwards. I just simply cannot imagine that happen. I just don't think there's no way back. Like, we're getting so focused about it. You know, the world is changing. You know, people are getting educated. Like 2, 3, 4 years ago, who cared about privacy? Now, I'm in general, there's a lot of people who care about privacy, but now we're getting educated, right?
Yes.
There's an, know what it means.
Another question that's kind of come through, Morten, is I get the impression that obviously that with everything going on at the moment, that there's a real need for your services and Wire services. But do you think that the kind of the tech industry as a whole is like well prepared to manage this current situation, you know, in terms of, you know, are we or are you kind of like running to keep up with this huge amount of extra demand that's being put on collaboration platforms like your own?
Yes and no. I think in crisis, there's always a tremendous amount of innovation coming out of it, right? And, you know, I see the news, I see how people, restaurants and everything else is trying to basically do this. And I'm so impressed about humankind, right? How innovative we are, especially in crisis, and how we look for good things and positive learnings while the world is actually pretty horrible, right?
Yeah.
And I think that goes for the tech industry as well. We've seen some privacy shitstorms from the collaboration industry, and we see them basically deploying what I would call, in my world, the old school best practices very quickly. That is fine. But in general, I think it's getting ready. I think the customers are there. I think the demand is changing, and that will change the landscape. That's what I said, what I call the old school security architecture towards the new school security architecture of true end-to-end encryption. I think that is unstoppable as well. And it sounds easy, but it's not. But you'll see a lot more. And I see any crisis like that is a catalyst for more innovation coming forward.
It's funny, actually, I've had quite a few people that run businesses that have been quite spooked by some of these privacy and security concerns around, other collaboration platforms. Do you think that people should be concerned about some of the, other headlines that have been out there?
Yes.
Yes.
yes, I think. But if I would answer anything else, I would have the wrong job in the wrong company, right? Yes, I think people should take this serious, right? And you've seen massive phishing attack using Corona and the fear of people to basically get behind that. You see it. You fundamentally see cybercrime is using a crisis to step up their efforts as well, and becoming more creative and innovative in how they do business. So yes, I think people should be worried about this.
Yeah.
And I think to an increasing level, they are worried about it. Even from my example with the small therapist, like going to your therapist is probably one of the most private things you can do as an individual, right?
Yes.
And you need to have a tool that guides that privacy. And if you do not trust that tool, you won't do it, you won't open up.
Yeah.
And when it comes to larger companies, whether this is, there are just certain projects, certain topics that are just having a higher level of secrecy. We're seeing them shift this in, right? Board meetings, innovative projects, go to market, market launches, marketing, competitive bidding. And there's just things where you just don't want your internal information to be known by someone else, because it would put you in a weaker competitive situation.
Yeah.
And the professional industry is really about how they collaborate with their customers. And for a professional services company, the worst thing that can happen is to leak confidential client data.
Yes.
And literally kill their business.
Yeah.
So we see that there are these use cases that just requires a high level of secrecy, right?
Mm.
And then there's other which don't. To be honest, in most large government or enterprise organizations, we to some extent coexist with other systems.
Yeah.
Right, because they serve their purpose and we serve our purpose. And again, you need to understand your business.
Yes.
You need to understand what your needs are. And I think in most organizations, there's not one tool that fits all purposes.
Yeah. Right?
But you need to understand this. And that's what we're seeing the most progressive companies is trying to understand. How are people working? What are they working on? What are the secret levels? What should we be concerned about? And which tools should we then comply to these different purposes?
Yeah.
So you get the good mix about security collaboration, project collaboration, meeting collaboration. It's two very different things, right, when you think about it. But they can be part of the same project. How do you manage this?
Yeah.
So it sounds like from a lot of what we've talked about today that actually we might not just be going through an acute period of change. As we mentioned earlier, it looks like actually we might be entering a whole new era that is kind of the future of work. What are the key things that you think should be up for debate as we enter that new era? What are the considerations that companies need to start thinking about? And what do you think will be the biggest challenges as we enter a longer term future of work?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, I think the good thing is the journey already started, right? Even before the Corona crisis, more than 50% of all knowledge workers work at least once a week outside the company firewall, right? So we know that we fundamentally know that this can happen and we're there. Now it's like every day, all the time, which is a massive step up here, right? So I think the best practices I see out there working with the enterprises, working with the governments, that is coming on the back of this, and some of it actually started before with some of the first movers, is understanding that remote work will be more and more. Like the corona crisis will fundamentally say it's going to be like, it's a massive accelerator, right? Mm. Because we've actually learned that we can work remote, that we can be productive, that we don't have to waste 2 hours every day on commuting to and from work, that it actually, you know, increases productivity personally and work. It's changing the social life. The sky is less polluted than it was before. There's a lot of positive things we can find around this one. And the most progressive and, in my opinion, professional customers that I work with are the ones who are starting to analyze who needs to work at home and how much. Mm-hmm. What are they working on? How does their work day look? What tools do we need to have to make sure that they do not lose productivity? Mm-hmm. Like take an average knowledge worker. If they're just losing 30 minutes a week, there's a lot of collaboration tools you could buy for the price of half an hour a week, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you make sure that your workforce does not lose productivity, that the tools are as seamly as they are at work and they can do exactly the same as they do at work? That requires you analyze a little bit about what they're doing. Now, what are they working on?
Yeah.
You know, how much of that is super is having an above normal secrecy level and what doesn't?
Yes.
How do we work on projects like that? Which tools should we use for certain products and which guidelines should we have? How do we train them to do that?
Yeah.
And how do we make that work seamless together? So that's the first phase. And the next phase is fundamentally understanding the way that IT system is integrated and how you share data. And now we touched on the privacy regulations. Because again, an organization needs to understand if you're working with data of privacy character, where are those data?
Mm.
And are they protected in the right way? And do we have the right permission to share them with other systems? And by the way, if they are old school, can the other IT system, do they have man-in-the-middle vulnerability, as we talked about earlier, so that they can read it? So I think the next phase that is coming is fundamentally, how do you build secure integrations between IT systems so that they work more seamlessly together? And how do you build those next generation secure workflows in the IT system? And I think that's where the collaborative industry can play a big role. But again, I see a complete generational change.
Yeah. So a couple
of security platform.
Got a few questions here. One from Helen, which kind of relates a little bit to what you've just been talking about, Morten, which is, what are some of the signs of a business that has reached the mature stage of being able to work in a distributed virtual way?
What are some of the signs? That it feels natural to everyone, right? Mm. That it's not forced, that it's an integrated way of working, that you know where your data is and what you're doing with them and how you protect that.
Mm.
And that you've thought through both the internal and the external collaboration. And that's different from company to company, organization to organization. Some needs to work external, some doesn't.
Yeah.
But how do you do that? Mm. And then again, I think we spoke about privacy, and will some of that be wind back? I think not. But I do think that the first wave of privacy compliance was just like legal tick boxes. Now I'm being a little bit aggressive, right? Yes, I accept this, and here are all the terms and conditions. Right? Mm. No one hasn't really yet invested in the IT systems to, how do you call it, natively embrace the privacy regulations. That's the next phase of it. Mm. And I think that will require a different type of crisis to basically accelerate that. It's coming slowly.
Yeah,
but wait until we see some of the big fines breaking the privacy regulations. I think people will start taking that more serious.
Should we take some more of these questions, Flo?
Yeah, absolutely. So, kind of related to that, actually, another question that's come in is around collaboration techniques. And somebody's asked what collaboration techniques you envisage for more robust business conduct that allows for secure work experiences, but whilst keeping a personal work experience?
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat that? Because that was a long question.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. So I think the question is around how we can collaborate or what techniques we can use to collaborate virtually, but without losing that kind of personal colleague to colleague work experience.
I think it's something that allows you to have a mix of the personal contact, right? So I believe very much in what we're doing. We like it with chat-based collaboration tool, right? And I think that is the next generation of how we collaborate. I think that's a given. But just let me give you an example. If I send an email to my children, I will never get a reply because that's not how they communicate, right? But if I send something on whatever chat tool that they're using, I get in contact with them. So I'm learning the new tools. And that's what we call the consumerization of enterprise communication and collaboration. How do you make sure that you have a tool that have that consumer look and feel, that we have this, real-time chat, which can be one-to-one, and which actually can also be in a group, and that you have a chance of actually talking like colleague to colleague about stuff that is not always work-related, but it's building the relationship. But you can use the same tool to actually do some work together. You can work on projects around that one. You can share documents. You can share files. And you can quickly, if you're working in a group, you can quickly start a conference call or something like that. And again, here, I believe it is the organization that you work for. It is their responsibility to make sure that the tools that are being used is having the right level of privacy, compliance, and security capabilities, depending on what you work with.
Yeah.
I hope that answered the question from Helen, I believe you said.
No, so it was someone else. It was
from... My apologies.
Yeah. Raghunatha. So actually a couple of questions here that have come in from Javier. One is around the impact of 5G on business. So what impact do you think that's going to make? And second, and it kind of related to that, when do you think we'll see that worldwide? And then how do you see Wire in a year's time?
Well, 5G is coming. I think you'll start seeing it. I think it's being started to roll out. I think every time you see the next generation of wireless technology in the mobile sector, the rollout has been faster and faster, right? You had 2G, it was more like in Europe, and 3G and stuff like that. But actually you saw that 4G in some developing territories actually got there faster than they got in the old world. And I think 5G, you'll see a very, very fast rollout of these capabilities. And the main reason is it just gives more bandwidth and more speed and allows for like faster devices. You'll see a better match between the computing capabilities of the devices and the network accessibility for them. And I think that's an unstoppable wave, right? You know, just think back what you did 5 years ago on your computer and how many of those tasks you today do on your phone.
Yes.
And you know, it's just, you have to stop and think, how did I do stuff 5 years ago? Because otherwise you don't even feel the change.
Yeah.
So I think that change will just continue dramatically. What was the third?
The other question, which is a completely different question, but also from Javier, which was, how do you see Wire in a year's time, or how would you like to see Wire in a year's time?
I would like. You'll see us in many more large enterprise customers and large government organizations. I have zero doubt about that based on the last couple of weeks. I think there's a lot of things that we need to do better, and I know my team is working on this. One of the things we've learned, because the limitation of encryption is actually how many people can you be in a chat, for instance, like a conference call. We recommend no more than 10 in a conference call and 4 on a video call in Wire, because if you're 10 people in a conference call, technically you have 9 upstream and 9 downstream. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of computing and processing. But we're currently now working on a whole new architecture there where you, without compromising the end-to-end security, can actually mix the signals on the servers. And so you'll have initially 1 upstream and then 9 downstream, and a little bit later you'll have 1 up and 1 down. And then it starts becoming compatible to the old school capacity, right? So what you'll see from us, not in a year's time, but in probably like closer to 3 months than 6 months, you'll see us doubling or tripling the number of people you can be in a conference call and video conferences. And again, 3 or 4 months after that one, you'll see another double. And we've seen clearly an increase in demand on that, and we're changing our roadmap to support that. what we will never compromise is our security here as well. And we deliver to a lot of SMEs from our cloud, but we actually also deliver a lot of on-premise installations to large enterprises and government organizations who prefer that form of delivery. And we need to master that to an even further extent.
Yeah.
Cool. One more question actually that's come in from Helen again is around Zoom fatigue. She says, what's your view of Zoom fatigue? And she also says, are we likely to see tools evolve to 3D?
3D, I have to admit, I have no clue. Probably, but I don't know. That's way too early for me. Zoom fatigue, I don't know. I think Zoom fatigue, let's take it in a more general picture than just the product in itself, but take it in like the video conferencing thing. I think not. I think that we figured out that this actually worked and we can do a lot over video conferencing and collaboration too. I think, as I said, you know, Zoom is way more like it's a virtual conference room where I think actually a lot of the collaboration and where Wire basically sits in the collaboration space is really like around, you know, secure project collaboration where we work together, we are chatting around it, we're working, we're creating the content, we're sharing the documents, and we're giving feedback and all that stuff. And once in a while we need to jump on a call, and sometimes these calls need to be secure. So it's two different ways. However, as I said in the beginning, I also like to be around people. Like, I like to have a beer with some of my employees and kind of like talk about the projects in a less formal thing. Because I think what Helen is referring to as the Zoom fatigue is it sometimes keeps things very formal all the time. And how do you make it informal? And that's also where in Wire we use our own tool, of course. And we have a lot of chats which has nothing to do with work. And we can chat individual as well, where it's sometimes and often it's private, you know. Our chief revenue officer, we're talking about the end of the month, we're talking about forecasts, we're talking about onboarding new people. But yesterday afternoon, I also asked him over why, you know, how do I actually fix the gear change on my bike? Because it changes gear by itself.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, go out, there's two screws here, and you did the last one, you turn right, and then you try that half around, and it worked, right? So I think you can do that in these chat-based tools. But again, I would have liked to take the bike ride with my colleague, right?
Yes. Question here from Penny, which I think is was that someone who works with local authorities, so I guess in the kind of like local government, and there's a perception that collaboration tools are not secure, such as Zoom that she's mentioned. How would you suggest that kind of your work, how would you suggest that organization like this can be encouraged to embrace these new forms of collaboration tools against that kind of backdrop where there are these concerns around security?
Yeah. So first of all, I agree. And I've been being a national, Danish national, I have a, you know, I will always be Danish, even though I live in California. But we saw a lead coming in from a Danish municipality. And I took that myself. We jumped on a call. It was the beginning of the crisis. I jumped on a call on a Saturday morning, 7 a.m. over here. And he took the call on a Saturday afternoon in Denmark. And this was actually how this municipality, they also have like what they call the weaker citizens, which needs more attention. And they have therapists to deal with like young people who's having their problems. And they couldn't meet physically with them. And they're really concerned about dropping everything that they've been building with them. So how could they quickly put in a tool in place? And we talked about, you know, how much data is the tool using, how many people can be in the course. We talked about everything. We definitely talked about the security. How can you ensure that, you know, what you talk about, even if it's private, that is actually kept private in these areas as well.
Yes.
And the following week, he actually went and presented that to the IT team and the management team for that section of the municipality. And they decided to jump in on a trial, and we gave them a 3-month free trial to look into this. And now we're seeing other colleagues from other municipalities actually talking about this. This is what we see all the time. When people start using this and they like the security and they understand that the usability is actually okay.
Yes.
Right? It's actually pretty good.
Yes.
Then they start talking to their professional network.
Yes.
Right. So to the question is talk about this, try it out, and share your good experiences with your professional network. Give these recommendations. You know, as a vendor from Wire, this is, I think, half our business comes as referral from some of our customers because they actually like the tool and they believe in the same things we believe in. Privacy,
yes.
The security to enforce that, and the transparency we have by being open source technology. That, you know, there's no way we can claim something that we're not.
Yes,
virtually impossible for us to claim that our video conferences are encrypted when they're not.
Yeah, we're kind of getting towards the end of our show now, but I just wanted to pick up on one comment that we've had from the audience, which I agree with, that maybe there's a element of a novelty factor of us all working remotely, and so when people talk about a fatigue from video calls, it might be that kind of like over time we would develop a bit more discipline, in the same way as we maybe sometimes in businesses have too many pointless meetings. I'm sure that's kind of been replicated on a virtual level. So kind of just thank you, Sonia, for that comment. But maybe just kind of wrapping up, Morten, I was thinking that obviously that you're a CEO of a collaboration business, but you're also a leader. And, you know, outside of, obviously, sounds like quite an exciting time for Wire because you're at the heart of helping companies to work in these challenging situations. But it's also kind of quite a challenging time for people personally. And what's your advice as a leader in terms of how you know, for other businesses out there, you know, as a CEO of a company that's going through this situation, what's your advice for how to keep sort of teams and loved ones positive at this time?
Yeah. Well, I have a long list of things that I would do better next time. Communicating to the entire company better about what's going on, all that stuff, you know, honestly, I think I have been extremely poor of that. And that's something I need to do better. But I don't think that's just something you need to do when you're remote, but fundamentally because all the structure was basically pulled away and I never put that in place. So let's shame on me on that stuff. But more fundamental, I think every human actually like to make a difference. They like to have meaning in their life, their work life and their private life. And if you talk about that, you know, how can we do this? You know, how can we reinvent our business? How can we adapt to this? How can we create innovation? How can we help other people? How can we make our tool better so it's more secure and it works even better for our customers, right? So creating meaning in a difficult time, and making sure that people feel that they're meaningful in what they're doing to you know, to themselves, to the team they work in, to the company they work for, and to the customers that we ultimately work for. And I think that gives energy. And if you have energy and you feel that what you do makes a difference, I think you have that surplus of energy to take care of your loved ones and your colleagues and helping out people who are in a less fortunate situation. Yes. There's actually a lot of people around the world right now who needs an extra hand and a little bit of a help and a virtual hug.
No, I think that's a really important point, actually, in that there's no doubt that the world needs lots of energy, lots of creativity and problem solving, and that we all have a role to play in that. And as you say, if you can sort of empower your teams to be able to kind of help try and solve some of these problems that need solving, then that will kind of give everyone a lift and you know, can take that positive energy into other areas of our life. So thanks so much, Morten, for coming on and sharing your experiences and everything that's going on in Wire. And thank you to all of our guests who've joined us and asked, you know, so many questions. That's probably been the most kind of interactive event that we've had. And so we're going to be making this available as a recording via our Without Borders podcast. And then our next event, which is going to be in 2 weeks' time, because we've got a public holiday next Friday, is going to be focused on why creativity loves constraint. And it's going to be like focused on, it's going to be with Gabriella Lungo, who's a kind of a creative expert. And she's going to be talking to us about, you know, the actually, although a lot of us are actually dealing with having less resources at this time. But actually that can present an opportunity. And often when we have less resources, sometimes that's really when we're at our most creative. So that's going to be on Friday the 15th of May. But thank you so much, Morten. Anyone who wants to look up Morten or learn more about Wire can go to wire.com. You can check out taitopr.com if you want to look at future events. But thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for joining. Thanks again, Morten. And stay safe.
Bye, guys.
Same to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.